All right, you can make your way back to your seats. Good morning, everybody. I'm going to work on figuring out a way that I can get more people to sit on this side. What could it be? What could it be that I could I do to get more people to sit on this side? I'll think about it. I'll just think about it. I don't know. It's swimming around in there. Okay. There you go. adding almost two over here. That's awesome. Okay, so this is kind of the second part. Really glad to see all you guys here today. But this is kind of the second part of a sermon I gave. It's been 2 months now because I kind of skipped one cycle. And that last time I talked about a beautiful heart and what it really meant to have a broken heart and how that affects us and what to do about it. And so I said I would talk about a little bit more about the heart. And so this one's going to be more about you've had that broken heart, you've been hurt. How do you lead your heart into a direction where, not that that won't happen again, but that God is going to make you desire the things that bring you joy. So to start this out, I was thinking about some Christmas movies that I saw. I saw The Grinch. It came out like, I don't know when it was. It must have been near Christmas or something. It was a while ago. But I saw The Grinch, and I was thinking about the cartoon version, right? I wanted to go see it. And I'm not a fan of Christmas movies, obviously. None of us probably are, really. But I wanted to see The Grinch. And I like other movies such as, not that one. What, The Scrooge. What's Scrooge? Christmas Carol. The Christmas Carol, exactly. So, and I was like, what is it about these movies that I like? Because I don't like the Christmas aspect out of it. It doesn't add anything to me. The lies about Christmas and the deception that's involved in that, it doesn't bring anything into the story. But I still enjoy the story. So why do I enjoy the story? And I was thinking about this. Maybe I was feeling guilty about seeing a Christmas movie. But I was thinking about it, and I was like, you know, the story is really powerful. There is nothing more powerful than seeing a story about someone when their heart changes. When their heart changes from hatred and depression and all of the things that you can let your emotions take you away in, into just experiencing true joy and happiness and trying to show love to other people. So there's a certain element of that that's very wholesome. It's connected to the heart so deeply that story, this is also why I go to camp, and I love the camps, because you see the exact same thing happen. You see somebody where they had no concept of God, and their heart was black. And they learn about God. They learn about Jesus. And they accept what he's offering. They accept his salvation. And their heart completely turns around. And you get to see the magic in that. The wonder of someone's heart changing. And that's so powerful to me that I just wanted to share that as part of this message. Because it's what I've been thinking about all week. It's what we talked about a little bit in the youth last night. So, and I wanted to share what we talked about in youth, because it was kind of related. So this is going to be a duplicate a little bit of the first part if you were here at youth last night. But we talked about childlike faith. And we talked about the kind of heart that a child has. Right, and some of the characteristics of it. So I'm going to give you some of the characteristics of it right after some comics that I found. This comic, it's called Heart vs. Brain. It's an online like comic that I found. I don't think it's in the papers or anything, but I found it really interesting and ironic because it's called Heart vs. Brain. The heart is very emotional and just kind of like does everything that the character does is just doing it basically off of emotion and just like first instinct, like without thinking about anything. That's the heart's character. And then you have the brain, which is always kind of like commenting on what the heart is doing. Why are you over there? Why are you so excited about that? And thinking and overthinking things. So in this first one, you can see the heart says, "You're using it wrong." And the brain is saying, "I hate snow." Next one, "The world is scaring me. Fix it." Isn't that how our heart feels sometimes? The brain can't fix it, though. "Heart, what happened?" "I watched the news." "I'm worried about our financial situation." "Then let's buy something really cool to take our mind off the stress." This one, I couldn't help think about Alex, like at work. Like in the morning, he goes in and, I don't know, in any workplace, it says, "I hate work, let's go home. I'm going crazy. I'm so bored." This is the heart talking. "It's only 10 a.m., says the brain. "Ah, sigh. Would it help if we played online for an hour?" I said, "Yeah." "This way, heart." Chasing a butterfly. Oh, and in this comic, there's always a butterfly around the heart for some reason. He's always like kind of off in the clouds chasing butterflies. But the brain's trying to go down the path of adult responsibilities and the heart has already ran to utter nonsense. It's a pretty funny little comic strip. But the thing that I really liked about it was that it reveals the struggle that we all have between our heart and our head and trying to make decisions. It's really hard to control the heart. It's really hard to lead the heart. So, let's go to Matthew 18. We're going to read a few verses there. Matthew 18 will be somewhere between verses 3 and 10. I'll probably read the whole thing. Matthew 18 says, starting with verse 3, "And verily I say unto you, except ye be converted and become as little children, ye shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoso shall receive one such little child in my name receiveth me. But whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it would be better for him that a millstone were hung around his neck and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe unto the world because of offenses, for it must needs be that offenses come. But woe to the man, to that man by whom the offense comes." So I'll stop there. This is directly after the disciples asked Jesus what they thought was an important question. It was a desire of their heart. They wanted to know which of them was greatest. Which of them was the greatest? And so this is Jesus' answer to the disciples of who's greater. And he elevates this child that was there up with him. And he tells them about the heart of this child, the state of this child's heart. And how it was just completely open and it wasn't seeking after anything after its own. It was this type of heart is a type of heart that has different characteristics, and those characteristics are: this type of heart asks honest questions, and it asks questions openly, and it's not afraid of being vulnerable. It asks questions with vulnerability. This type of heart, it doesn't know what's best for itself, but it but it listens to the person it's following. And finally, it trusts the person that it's following. It understands that its ultimate satisfaction is found in the person that they're trusting, which is usually the parents, if it's a child, child's heart. So I want to go over these again. The first one was asking honest questions. When I say that faith, like a child, asks honest questions, I mean questions that don't challenge or subvert or undermine. They simply want to know the truth. If you have the heart of a child and you're seeking out God, you just want to know the truth. You don't want answers that are only going to ultimately fulfill the desires of your heart. Children, they are sinful. We can recognize that. They do challenge authority, and their questions are always curious. They're eager, but they're also innocent questions. Each one has a single motive. They want to be taught. They truly want to understand that truth. We sometimes forget this as adults because we encounter so many loaded questions. We're always on the defensive with questions. Why are you asking that question? Are you going to try to use it against me? It becomes very scary to answer questions or to ask questions. These questions with ulterior motives, they're meant to challenge and they're designed to undermine or embarrass somebody else, because they're ultimately being asked out of selfishness. We become passive, aggressive with our questions, and sometimes we just get confrontational. This child that Jesus held up, he wasn't like this. He was just eager to know the truth. And what better place to learn the truth than from your Savior, your Master Jesus, that's standing before you. The second one was asking questions openly. If you're a child, you don't fear your reputation or your image. You don't care about who's around when you ask a question. And this can create awkward situations, because the child could ask, why is that lady wearing that? But this is an honest question that a child could ask, and it's of innocence, because they simply don't know and they don't think anything at all about who knows that they're asking that question. They haven't been taught. They haven't been taught shame. There's no embarrassment until we teach them that they're supposed to be embarrassed. Children also focus only on the one that they're asking the question for. They're not concerned about anybody else around. They ask a question directly to one person, and they just expect an answer from that person. So that's part of the reason why they ask so openly. They're just thinking of that one person. And imagine if we prayed like this. Imagine if we could block out everybody else and we focused on God this way, where nothing else mattered. Nobody else was around. And we didn't care about what anybody else thought, any questions that might come, anybody that's ignorant of what you're doing, any worries, any doubts, no consequence. That's the heart that we need to have for God. The third one, childlike faith asks from a place of vulnerability with the expectation of an answer. When they're little children, kids see their parents as kind of all-knowing, right? They think they know everything. But over time, they're forced to come to grips with the things that parents don't know. Children instinctively know that their knowledge is limited. And even if you can't, even if they can't articulate it, that's why they ask so many questions. So to find out dad and mom, they can't answer all their questions. It takes a position of vulnerability, and it makes it feel uncertain and tenuous. They start with total trust. They have total trust at the beginning. And what if we had that with God? What if we had total trust with God? What if we could have started at the beginning with God, totally trusting Him? See, the children, they grow out of their trust with their parents. But we have to grow into our trust with God, because we've already grown out of our trust with our parents. Because we find out that they don't know everything. But here's the good thing. God does know everything. And the sooner we understand that, the sooner we can become utterly dependent on God. We can have complete vulnerability. We can be honest and open with our questions. We can expect that God will answer us with precisely what we need when we need it. Number four, faith of a child doesn't know what's best for themselves, but they trust that their parents know. Parents, sure, but parents generally know what's best for their kids, right? Or at least they know, have a better idea of what's good for them than they do. No candy for breakfast. Don't play in the street. Don't eat that glue. Don't poke that cat. Eat your veggies. Do your homework. Don't hit your sister. Children get frustrated with these commands, even though they're for their own good. Just like we get frustrated with how God knows what's best for us. And so He gives us commands accordingly. But children don't always understand why parents say no or do this. Often the reason is really just simply beyond their maturity or capacity for understanding. But if parents are loving and generally stable, kids will always trust them. Kids have an incredible capacity for trust. We understand even less about God's reasons that He gives us, because the depth and the breadth of His wisdom is so vast. It's so infinite. But we certainly still find opportunity to gripe and to moan and to rebel against Him and throw tantrums just like a little kid does. But because of His word, His character, His promises, and all the ways He has shown us His love, we can most certainly, absolutely trust Him. Last one, childlike faith trusts and finds satisfaction with parents. So even when children are frustrated or confused by parents, so long as the parents show love to the children, they will still trust them deeply and take pleasure in their presence. Kids feel at home with their parents. And God is our answer to our questions and doubts. And just being in His presence, it soothes our anxieties. His presence and love is what we need, always. Children can get this from their parents for a time, until they grow out of it. They understand so little, yet they are so much more right than we are. We've grown out of our faith in so many ways. So when I talked about this with the youth, we were trying to understand the aspect of what is the good part of that heart that the child has, even though that there's a lack of understanding, a lack of knowledge. What is Jesus really trying to present us when He's saying, have a heart like a child? That doesn't mean that we can take away all the knowledge that we have and be innocent like a child again. It means that we're growing into a trust with God, because we know that He does have all the answers and He can provide us with relief and joy in our lives. And He's never going to take us down a wrong path, because He knows what's best for us. Understanding that a pure heart, before it's broken, has these attributes is the first part. We can see why it's so easy for us to get into bad situations, because we're just following our heart, right? But a child's heart will follow anyone with complete trust. But it's not a good thing to just follow anyone, right? There's a reason why we have to grow up. There's a reason why God puts us through the things that He does. Because we still need a clear understanding of who we need to follow. Because we can't just follow after anyone. God wants us to keep this aspect of the heart to be able to follow Him. And He doesn't want us to follow after every wind of doctrine from the world. So our one goal from childhood is summed up in this video. Let's see if it works.
Waffle time!
Hey, man. I'd like to talk to you about something.
What's that?
Well...
Hey, Captain. I think B-Ship's trying to pull a joke on us, man. Salt and pepper shaker won't come apart.
Hey, toss my beer.
Hey, thanks, man. Don't forget to mop the kitchen after breakfast.
Yes, sir.
You want to tell me something?
It's about your faith.
My faith?
Yeah.
What about it?
Well, I'm in.
You're in?
Yeah, I'm in.
Now, are you saying that you want to be in?
I'm saying I'm in.
You're really in?
I'm really in.
Because you can't be half in and say you're in. You got to be all in, brother.
I'm saying I'm all in.
Oh, Caleb, I can't believe it, man. You're my brother.
I'm your brother?
Yeah, man, you're my brother from another mother. But now we got the same father.
What?
Oh, I'll explain it to you later, man. This is awesome. Does Catherine know?
No. No, I don't think she'd care right now, to tell you the truth. She hasn't been taking too well to this whole love dare thing.
But you're not done yet, right?
No, I'm day 21 out of 40. But I'll be honest with you. Up to this point, my heart's not been in it.
That's what matters. A woman can tell when you're just going through the motions.
That's absolutely right. And let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
How did you get off to such a good start with Tina? I mean, why is it so easy for you?
Well, it's not always been easy. Marriage takes work, man. Tina is an incredible wife. But we learned a lot of lessons the hard way.
Well, at least you haven't had to face divorce.
I wish that were true.
What does that mean? You and Tina been struggling that much?
Not me and Tina, but I deal with my first wife.
What? You were married to someone before Tina?
For one horrible year. I got married for the wrong reasons, then I turned around and got a divorce for the wrong reasons. Man, I thought I was just following my heart.
Michael, I've worked with you for 5 years. You've never told me that.
Because I'm not proud of it. It was before I gave my life to the Lord, and man, I was just only concerned about my rights and my needs. Man, I ruined her life. But when I gave my life to God, I tried to find her, but she'd already remarried. So believe me when I tell you I got a big scar. Man, God meant marriage to be for life. That's why you gotta keep your vows to Catherine. You gotta beg God to teach you how to be a good husband. And don't just follow your heart, man, because your heart can be deceived. But you gotta lead your heart.
So our one goal from childhood and on is to take our beautiful heart, have it get broken, learn from the experience so that we can lead our heart. If a living soul can accomplish this, they'll be able to transform all the desires of their heart to coincide with the will of God. That's brain and heart working together. So, how do we lead our heart? First, you need to understand that your heart will follow your investment. Whatever you pour your time and your money into, and your energy, it's going to draw your heart in. So you need to check what that is. In checking your heart, one of the keys is to be constantly aware of this. What you're putting your energy into. Do you know what your heart has in it right now? What you're thinking about? Are you thinking about being somewhere else? Are you thinking about what you're going to be doing next week? Check your heart and make sure that it's focused on God so that you can invest in God, so that you can be invested. Could be what you're always talking about. What are you always talking about? Are you always talking about God or the Bible? Deuteronomy 6:6-9 says that we should be thinking about God when we walk by the road and in our house and when we get up and we lie down. Every moment, there should be some aspect of God influencing our life and our decisions and our thoughts. If that's true, then we can check our heart based on what we're thinking about. You also have to guard your heart. Now, guard your heart. I don't know. You could immediately kind of take this and say, I'm gonna close off my heart and make sure nobody touches it. You can go back to that beautiful heart, right? But is that what's being said? This was our scripture reading, and it said, the way of the wicked is as darkness. They know not at what they stumble. My son, attend to my words, incline thine ear unto my sayings. Let him not depart from thine eyes. Keep them in the midst of thy heart, for they are life unto those that find them, and health to all their flesh. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are all the issues of life. When something unhealthy tempts your heart, it's your responsibility not to say, oh, I've been hurt, so I'm never going to like open up to anybody again. But it's your responsibility to guard against the temptation, to steer your heart in the right direction. That's what he's saying. In the King James, it says to keep your heart with diligence by continually checking it. Don't let your heart put money or your work above God and your family. You've got to prioritize your heart for it. Because we already know that your heart is just going to go after the first thing that it sees. And go in every direction. Because it's pulling you with emotion. So don't let your heart lust after the beautiful woman or man that you want. Don't let it lust after anything else that you chase after. Don't let your heart consume your time with all of your habits of watching TV or playing games or without including God in how you spend your time. The Bible also says, if riches increase, do not set your heart on them. A big problem for a lot of people that like win the lottery or come into a lot of money is that their options increase. They have a lot more options of what they can do with their life. And so what do they start doing? They start doing stuff. They start spending money. They start making decisions. They start changing their life. And as they're changing their life, I think most of them kind of stop asking God. Because now that they have all the money and that they have so much more control, they let their heart take over. And they stop checking their heart and they stop leading their heart. And they quit guarding it. I encourage you to set your heart. The Apostle Paul, he taught us to set our heart on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. It's time to identify where your heart needs to be and then choose to set your heart on those things. Colossians 3, 1 through 3 says, if ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on things of the earth, for ye are dead, and your life is hid with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then shall ye also appear with him in glory. So, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And you don't want your heart going down a path of the tangible material that's going to be destroyed. You want your heart to be thinking about eternal things, something that's going to last forever. Being with Christ in glory. And as you're checking on this and trying to set it, just ask yourself that question. Is this thing that I really care about right now, is it going to matter to me next year? Okay. Is it going to matter to me in 5 years? Okay, maybe a little bit. Is it going to matter to me in 10 years? Is it going to matter to me in 20 years? Is it going to matter to me at the end of my life? Because you can't take it with you. Finally, make sure you're investing. Don't wait. Don't wait for your heart to feel like it's ready to do the right thing. Psalm 62, 1 through 8. Truly my soul waiteth upon God. From him cometh my salvation. He only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be greatly moved. How long will ye imagine mischief against a man? Ye shall be slain, all of you. As a bowing wall shall ye be, and a tottering fence. They also consult to cast him down from his excellency. They delight in lies. They bless with their mouth, but they curse inwardly. My soul, wait thou upon God. For my expectation is from him. He only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be moved. In God is my salvation and my glory, the rock of my strength and my refuge. In God. Trust him at all times, ye people. Pour out your heart before him, because God is a refuge for us. I know your hearts have been deceived at one point or another, and trust has been broken. But you can steer your heart in the right direction. You can lead your heart. Because through your experiences, you've suffered pain, but you've also grown in ways that you would not have otherwise. The Lord has shaped you to be where you are right now. Even to this day. So now, I ask you to offer your hearts up again, despite the risk that you take. The risk of the sour part of the process. The risk of being hurt. And learn to lead your heart toward the ways of the Lord, knowing that he's going to fulfill you and bring you contentment and joy in the purest sense, in the same way that we can bring contentment and joy to our children who completely trust us. So we must refine our hearts to be like the heart of the child, believing every word of God, despite knowing that there are other words that are going to try to deceive us. May our prayer be today that the Lord will show us the truth in each passing moment, and that he will humble us enough to receive it, and faithful enough to not be filled with the fear of our own well-being and our own selfishness, but to be filled with the wisdom of God and his loving kindness. God bless you.